In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I are going to be talking about launch dates for Drip and Audit Shark. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 149. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, a podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
We're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, Mike?
Well, I kind of wanted to address some comments that were on the podcast blog from episode 147. There was a lot of discussion there. Some of it was kind of based on Audit Shark and what's been going on with it. It said, basically, Mike and Rob as co-hosts is just ignoring what's going on, pretending everything is fine, when Audit Shark hasn't even been launched after several years. So I kind of wanted to take a couple of minutes and address that issue. I think it's only fair to address it for the listeners.
Yeah, fire away.
I don't want to go too far into the details just because they're not entirely relevant. But at the same time, one of the things that I haven't really been forthcoming about on the podcast is that there's a medical issue that I've been dealing with for the past several years, which has severely impacted my ability to work on the product. There are some things around motivation as well that are associated with this medical issue. It was probably about, I'd say, 3 weeks ago that I was actually diagnosed with it. I've been going to a doctor for a couple of years trying to figure out what's going on. Finally, switched doctors, and it was probably only two or three visits and a couple of tests, and they were able to kind of pinpoint it. Right now, I'm on treatment for it that is a radical change, if nothing else.
Right. I mean, just all kinds of symptoms that have impacted your ability, probably not only to work on Audit Shark, but on your consulting contracts, I'd imagine, to get a lot of stuff accomplished.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally been severely affecting my life in general. You're encountering the same symptoms over and over, and the doctor you're seeing says, oh, well, I think you should do this, this, and this. And you do those things, and it doesn't help. And he's like, well, you're not doing them enough here. It's like there's something else going on. So eventually, I just decided, okay, I need to go see somebody else. And I did. And like I said, I figured out what the problem is, and I'm on treatment for it already, and things are going extremely well. I mean, literally, the very first day of treatment, absolutely radical change. I don't think that this is the sole contributing factor. I think that it's a major contributing factor, but not the only one.
Right. I think that's important. I mean, specifically, you emailed me, and one of the things you said is, I'm not sure I want to talk about it because I don't want this to turn into some kind of pity party. And I don't want people to think that I'm like scapegoating this health issue. You know, I would have launched Audit Shark years ago if, I didn't have this health issue going on. So I think we should be clear that's not what you're trying to do here.
Like I said, I feel like it has been a major contributing factor, but it's certainly not the only one. One of the big things is obviously with Audit Shark, it's clearly a much bigger product or project that I would not necessarily advise people going after for their first or second time out, but it's a huge, huge product. There's a lot of moving parts. It's very complicated, and it's just hard to put certain things into focus for everybody in general and make it understandable.
Let's throw out a couple mistakes, you know, that you've admitted to me, and I'm sure I will have no problem talking about on the podcast. Bit off probably a more complex product than you originally thought it would be. Like, I bet in your head when you first started, you said, I'm going to run some auditing stuff, and this is going to take me a few months to cobble together. And then, I mean, if you spent 1,000 hours working on it, it's probably larger than you originally envisioned.
Oh, definitely. I mean, one of the things that I did was I built a command line version of it first, and that did not take me all that long to do. And I was like, oh, this is going to be easy. This isn't going to be very difficult to put something together that I'm going to be able to push out. And it's going to be, you know, a short timeline to get it out to market. And that turned out to be completely not the case. And I made several mistakes. I started delving into a bunch of different technologies that I just wasn't familiar with. I'd never worked with them before. You know, Windows Azure was one of them, SQL Azure, WCF services. You know, right now we're kind of steeped in the middle of, MVC and all these other things that are associated with it. And it's just, they're all things that I've never worked with before, and it's hard to estimate how long something's going to take when you've never done it before or anything even remotely close to it. I'll be honest, those are just huge mistakes, I would say, in terms of the implementation. Are they the wrong decision ultimately? I don't think so, but they certainly contribute to the amount of time that it's taken.
Yeah, I think they contribute. You can look at that as maybe mistake number two is like you're going to build a new product, and then you're also biting off the learning curve of multiple technologies at once. They're probably the right technologies for the job. I think in the end, like you said, it's the right decision, but it just meant that you spent 2, 3, 4x what you would have spent if you were using the tools that you already had experience with.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's probably an underestimate.
Yeah, I think another misstep was kind of your early focus on banks and financial institutions. You had some leads there. You had talked to a few banks, but when it came down to it and you finally had an app that really worked, the sales cycle was going to be really long. There was just a lot of complexity. And you needed a high price point to sell into them. And so you needed a much, I'll say like a much more valuable app. You know, you need an app that provides a lot of value if you're going to sell it for 10, 20 grand a year than you do if you're going to sell it for 500 bucks a year.
Right. And I mean, some of it was my own fault for not asking the right questions once I was in there. But even in discussing it with them, they're like, oh, well, that sounds like a great idea. And, you know, I'd be interested to see how it goes. But they were more interested, I found out later, they were more interested in finding out about how my business worked and how I did it because I was a local entrepreneur. It wasn't that they were actually interested in solving their own problems. It was that they wanted to know how it went because I was a local entrepreneur in their area and it had nothing to do with solving problems.
Right. So if someone's out there listening now and they probably have heard, you know, a lot of the steps over the past few years that you've talked about AutoShark, I still get questions. People come up to me at MicroConf and other conferences and they say, you know, what is AutoShark and what does it do? And can you explain it in like one sentence in a way that I would understand and that someone who's not steeped in security really understands what it does, like the simple value proposition, not the engine behind it, but the value prop?
Sure. So AutoShark allows you to get a second set of eyes on your server that essentially looks at all of the important things that you should be looking at from a security perspective, but you probably aren't for two reasons. One is you don't know what you should be looking at. And two, there is just so much stuff that you should be looking at that it's just not worth becoming a security expert to go look at it.
Right. So you sent me this document. And the reason I'm asking these questions is you and I had a conversation offline hashing through all this stuff. And you sent me a document from CISecurity.org, which is like a self-funded or a nonprofit that sets up all these agreed upon security checkpoints. So if you have a Windows 2008 server, maybe there are 250 different things, knobs that should be checked and they should be set to a certain thing in order for that server to be secure. And what AutoShark does is you install it on your server, you install a little client piece on your server, and then AutoShark has a web admin that I can log in and I can look to see if everything's set up correctly. And if it's not, then you're going to show me, at least give me a little bit of information. This is where the remediation part comes in that you've talked about. You're going to give me at least a little bit of information about how I should proceed to go in and fix that. And you're going to have an upsell where I should be able to either subscribe at a higher level or pay you, you know, a one-off thing to have you or someone, you know, like another security expert on your team come in and fix that. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Okay, so that's your value prop today. See, this is the thing that I haven't understood because you've talked about like building your rules engine. You know, this is like 18 months ago. Talk about how you had to get your rules engine built. And that didn't make sense in the context of just this kind of vague auditing thing. But now that we're really talking about nuts and bolts of what AutoShark does, it's like, oh, I get it. The rules engine really just looks at your control points, right? That goes out and looks at, oh, is this bit flipped in the registry? Or, you know, is this port closed? Or whatever, is this security setting appropriate? And so not only did you built the rules engine, then you went to the CISecurity.org document and you took the things that they recommend and you implemented those in AutoShark so that the value to AutoShark to someone like me, like the Numa Group or another small SaaS app, is not that I can install an auditing tool. The value is that you've pre-programmed all of these specific checkpoints in so that I don't need to know about security. I can run it, get a report, and then either, you know, fix this stuff myself if I know how or hire someone to do it.
Exactly. And it will give you a score, essentially. Like, let's say that it runs 250 different control points and you pass 200 out of 250. Well, there's some percentage compliance score that you're going to have based on that. And you may go through those extra 50 and say, well, this applies or this doesn't. And you can, you know, mark them as exceptions or something like that. But basically, you can boil that down to a score that says, I don't know, 85% compliant according to this policy. And over time, your goal is to raise that from 85% to 90% to hopefully close to 100%. I mean, there are certain things that you're not going to do for business reasons. And I'll give you a very specific example. One of the recommendations that they generally have is don't install a web server on the servers in your environment. It's like, well, if you're running a web server, you kind of have to install a web server on the machine. So there are certain things you're going to just blatantly ignore. And you're going to say, I don't need to listen to this because it's not important. And I have business reasons for doing what I'm about to do.
Okay, so you've said you've figured out this health issue, hopefully, and you're hoping that, you know, kind of the treatment that you're on is going to sustain you and your motivation is going to stay up. You've been cranking on it for 3 weeks. What have you gotten done in the past few weeks, and where does Autochirc stand today, like a realistic assessment of what needs to get done to get it to launch?
Sure. I'll give you a rundown of the things that I've done over the past couple of weeks. I started getting familiar with Facebook ads. And is it just me, or the more ads you run, the more they bump up your suggested maximum?
You know, rate? I haven't seen that. I'm wondering if you run them at different times with the same demographic, sometimes you'll have other competitors and it'll bump up. Or are you using the same demographic, or have you changed that at all?
I've changed the demographic a little bit, but on one of them I was running, every time I went to save it, and this was like throughout the course of like an hour or two, every time I went to save it, they would bump it up.
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. I'd have to look. Now, if your click-through rate is going down, then they will, but every time your click-through rate goes down, as it decreases, the minimum bid will bump up.
So I haven't paid attention to how much it went up or down. I think it's actually gone up, okay. So I don't know. I've started exploring into the Facebook ads. I created a Facebook page so that I could actually do paid advertising on Facebook and get it into the newsfeed area.
You heard about the newsfeed ads are doing a lot better than the right-hand side stuff.
Yeah, I got very, very little traction on the right-hand side. It did show some of them, but you know, the click-through rates were abysmal.
Right?
So I didn't even
and
bother.
So you're running Facebook ads to do what? Are they going to like an Autochirc landing page to collect an email address to build a launch list?
Yeah, I actually have two different landing pages that I set up specifically for this. And basically, I'm funneling people into those two. I'm testing a couple of different marketing pitches kind of for the tagline to kind of see what resonates with people. I tried targeting just computer programmers, and that did not work out. That thing just tanks hardcore. I mean, people would click through, but then they wouldn't actually convert. I literally got zero people converting to the point that I was like, well, is there something technically wrong that's preventing them? And I couldn't find anything. So I think that it's just the wrong demographic. They're not interested. And so I targeted pretty much every single security related interest that you could find through their specific interests area. I've got about a 30% conversion rate when people hit that page. So it's doing, I think, reasonably well. I did an HTTPS redirect on a page, which messed up all of my referrer conversions for Kissmetrics. So I had to undo that. I was thinking, oh, well, it's a security product. I should probably make it HTTPS. And then anyone who hits it, if it gets flipped over to HTTPS, then it messes up the referrer. So kind of a small mistake there. I also got Autochirc featured on beta list a couple of days ago. That drove in a bunch of subscribers onto the launch list. I'd say in the past 30 days or so, I've roughly doubled my launch list. I want to triple it again before the end of September, but I haven't quite figured out how I'm going to go about doing that.
I think paid acquisition, if you want to do it that quickly, and I have some other ideas for you, not Facebook, that I think could work well with Autochirc.
But I am committed to actually, you know, putting forth a good effort to try and make that happen. Right now, I'm working through the new UI design with my lead developer, and I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to actually have it not only in place, but on the build server and being pushed out directly to the web through by the end of this
week. And just to clarify, that you wrote a new UI because you were using 3-year-old, 4-year-old technology that was clunky, and the legacy code was making it very hard for you and your team to build new features. And so you basically refactored your UI, and that's done, and you're launching that.
Right. The other thing is that over the past 4 weeks, traffic has consecutively every single week been higher than it was the previous week. Now, it looks like it will be higher this coming week. I don't know for sure, but you know, it depends on what other things that I do.
Right. Okay. So that's what you've done in about the span of 3 weeks, which is probably more than you had done in maybe the few months prior to that.
Yeah.
Right.
That's an understatement,
right.
I think.
Okay. You're rolling again, and you're ready to get this thing going. Where does Autochirc stand? Like, how soon can you launch it, and kind of what's left to get people using and paying for Autochirc?
So I have a sign-up page that's in place where I've sent the URL to a couple of people to sign in, install it on their servers. As I said before, I've got some people using it for early access. The biggest complaint that I've seen so far is that there's no instructions on how to remediate things. So if you look at the reports and it says, you know, X is wrong, then how do I fix that? And the UI doesn't give any indication of how to do that. You basically have to go back to the policy builder, or you have to go back to the reports from the source of where these control points are from. And that's just, it's not going to work for the customer. So essentially what I did was I went back to the policy developer and said, hey, I need you to start putting these in. He put a bunch of them in. It started working out. And then something busted in the policy builder. And it took a few days to get that fixed. Right now it's fixed. And I've told the policy developer he should be able to go back in and start adding those in. Right now he's only got 5 out of about 500 done. But I'm hoping he'll be able to go back through the rest of them and put those in place such that when the policies execute against the machines that the customers are running, then they'll be able to see in their reports exactly how to fix these things.
Got it. So that's where you stand today. You need to get this new version out, and you think you're going to have it done in the next week. And then, is that it? I mean, are you all integrated with Stripe? Like, you have a sign-in page where, you know, it's going to put a credit card token and all that stuff, all that code's written?
All that code's written. We ran into a slight problem where somebody couldn't sign up for early access because Stripe was denying it. But it turns out
that... I'm seeing that too. That's not your problem. I'm seeing that not all over the place, but especially with international cards, really running into problems with Stripe.
That's exactly what it was. What happened was the card was entered and then the bank denied it. They just blocked it. And then, you know, the person who was in the early access didn't really know what was going on. They said, well, I tried it, and I gave them a fake card to use, and they were able to get in and actually install it and start working with it. And then it was probably a week or two later, they said, hey, by the way, just to let you know, this is what happened. And it turns out that their bank had locked the account and locked all other things that they were using it for.
Nice. Yeah, we haven't seen it that bad, but I've definitely seen one or two people trying to get into it. It was our post early access, so it was the actual mini launch, and we're still dealing with their bank trying to get them to approve the charge. So you set up on the payment side then. So is there much else to do then? Like, could you flip the switch? Let's say you get this version 2 UI live next week. Are you going to launch next week, or what's holding you back?
I'm trying to get the marketing message right. I really want to try and figure out exactly the type of people who I guess would be the initial core market. You know, what taglines resonate the most with them is really what it comes down to. Because in between the two that I've done so far, one of them clearly resonated, but I think that the other one was on the wrong demographic. Right now, I've got them both targeted to the same demographic, and I want to test to figure out which one would resonate more so I can do more paid advertising and paid acquisition. But beyond that, I mean, there's not a lot that's stopping me from just kind of flipping the switch, but other than kind of the marketing side.
Right. You want to make sure that if you send people to the site, that at least a few of them are going to convert into trials, right? That you're communicating it well. Now, in terms of your early access list, I know you have, you know, a launch list, and you have some people who you have let in and who are using the app. Is it at the point where you think that people will be willing to pay for it as of next week when the new UI comes out? Or do you think that there's still more has to be done with remediation in order for it to be worth X dollars a month to folks who are already using it?
The remediation information has to be there. I don't think that it's a viable product without that remediation information there. And that's reliant upon my policy builder putting that stuff in there. I could certainly talk to him. I probably will, and say, hey, can you really make an effort to get as many of these possible as you can in, you know, this week and next week? Then, you know, I'm sure he'll be able to do that. That's not going to be too big a deal, but it's going to take him time. I mean, there's 500 of these things, and you know, he's got to go into every single one of them individually, look it up on the PDF, and say, okay, well, what is it that, you know, needs to be added in?
Right, 500 control points, right? 500 settings that you're checking across two different OSs, like Windows 2008, Windows Server 2008, Windows Server 2012, and you're checking all these points, and so you have to basically have some simple instructions on how to fix that, or at least resources.
Exactly.
Got it. So it sounds like from what you're telling me that you are honing in on a launch, like a true point where people can sign up, use Audit Shark, and that you think you're going to be providing enough value that some people will start paying for it very soon.
Yes.
Got it. So MicroConf Europe is coming up in just under a month. Do you think you'll launch before then?
I would like to. The question
what are the risks?
Kind of timing.
Yeah, what are your big risks that are going to keep you from launching here in the next 3 weeks? I mean, it sounds like 2 to 3 weeks is kind of the window you're talking about. What's going to keep you from doing that?
I think the biggest risk that I face right now is how long it's going to take to get the build server to push the new version of the code, because it's a completely different repository. So I'm going to have to reconfigure a lot of different things. And I'll probably have to basically build a new build script for that to push that out. leverages all the same data underneath, so I don't have to worry about inconsistencies there because we didn't make any structural changes. It's basically just a new GUI over the top of it. But obviously, I'm going to have to touch base with the early access people and say, hey, just letting you know all this stuff has changed a little bit. You know, it's just going to take time to verify that just because there's so many moving parts. There's a bunch of different libraries. There's the policy builder, which is self-updating. There's the agent, which is self-updating. I need to make sure that all of the interactions back and forth between work, as well as all the self-updating capabilities, because that's one of the key pieces that makes AutoShark easier to use so that you don't have to go in and continuously update the agents every time I spin a new build. Beyond that, there's also a risk with adding all the remediation information. It's not really a risk so much as it is how long is that going to take, and I don't know what the answer to that is. Because of my contractor, he's not full-time. It's not like he's doing this every single day for 40 hours a week. So he's only been able to put in probably 10 to 12, maybe 15 hours a week on any given week, and I don't know how long it's going to take him to do all of those.
Kind of thinking out loud here, because we haven't talked about this part, but there's this interesting question of, is it more important to get to launch to where people can publicly sign up, or is it more important to get to where people are paying you for something in private? You know what I'm saying? Because if you think about how I did Drip, I did the latter. But we still haven't launched, and yet I have 100 people in there trying it out. I have a handful of people paying for it. And so I would almost, it's funny that there's in the comments that we've seen, there's always this push towards launch of like, when are you going to launch it? When are you going to launch it? And I would actually say, not when are you going to launch it, but when are you going to get that first paying customer? When are you going to get that 10th paying customer? Those are more important than having a public web page that someone can come and sign in and download AutoShark, in my opinion.
Totally agree. I think it's definitely important for me to get to the point where people are paying for it, because that means that they're seeing value out of it. And if they're seeing value out of it, then I can essentially backtrack and say, okay, well, why are you seeing value out of it? And then take the words and phrases of why they're seeing that value and use those to get more people who would also see that
value.
Right,
because if you, let's say, you know, it sounds like you could feasibly, in theory, if you were to go crazy, you could send out an email tomorrow to your launch list and you could start running ads tomorrow and you could just send people in. They could sign up, they could, you know, give their credit card, and you're all set up to do that. They could download it, they could install it, and it would do something, right? It actually audits their server and it tells them, hey, these things are wrong. But so, and you could say, look at me, I launched. But what does that do, right? It doesn't do anything, because probably none of those people are going to pay, because you've launched without the value that you need to provide in order to charge someone. And so it sounds like getting the remediation piece in there, or that information in there, so that people actually, hopefully at that point, are willing to pay. And I think that's maybe a bigger risk than anything else you named, I think. You know, you named getting V2 UI out, and I think that you're going to do that. I have no doubt. You technical issues, I know you can handle. Less than a week, that'll be done. I bet that remediation stuff will take a couple weeks, like you said. The biggest question mark in my mind is, once you get remediation in, will then that be enough value for people to pay? Because if it still isn't, then you have to think about it more, right? That's where you have a big question mark of, what can I do? What can AutoShark do to make it worth the monthly fee?
Right. And actually, that kind of leads back to what I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago on an episode where I had said, I'm really thinking about going with a hybrid solution where I'm essentially offering security as a service, or, you know, to people, such that when AutoShark finds something, I can go in and then essentially analyze to figure out, is this applicable to your environment? Is it going to be right for you to do? How do we actually go about remediating this? Because right now, AutoShark is really just an information tool. It tells you the information, doesn't actually do it for you. But there's this concern, obviously, I mean, these are production servers that people are using. Do you go in and you just automatically fix something? If you find something that's busted, do you undo it? Or do you bring it into compliance? And it's a very hard question to answer, because it depends a lot on what you're looking at. Even if it's a new user, somebody created this new user so they could run a service account for this new software that they installed. And then if I delete it, then it just breaks that software. So, and if it was something they were legitimately using, then of course that's not going to be a good thing. I mean, I could disable the account, but I'm still going to break that piece of software that they installed.
Yeah, I don't see any way that you can just automatically do things like that on a production server. I wouldn't install something on a production server that did that, right? That actually made changes without me understanding what it was doing.
And the question that I've actually talked to other people about is, you know, would you feel comfortable with a system where it allows you to do that? So, like, for example, there's this thing that's wrong, and maybe it just give you a big red button that says, this is wrong, would you like to fix it?
Yeah.
Do you click that button?
Man,
or no?
I think there's got to be more info though, because fix it. What does fix it mean? That means revert it to what this security doc says it should be. But what if I have it that way so that, you know, my connection to XYZ API works, or so that a certain piece of software works? I just think there are too many exceptions. So yeah, now I get it. And I hope, you know, if you're listening to this, I hope you get the complexity of this, and that your tool audits and it actually does something valuable and it shows you information, but it's probably not valuable enough as of today for someone to pay for. And so you're moving, trying to push that bar forward and saying, you know, in a week or two, then I'll at least have remediation instructions into the app. Hopefully that will be enough for people to pay for. I think your biggest risk is definitely not the technical issues, but the question of at what point does Artichoke provide enough value that people will pay your monthly fee for it. And it sounds like your hypothesis is that it is having the remediation steps in there will at least convince some people to do it, and then offering that value add of you offering, you know, to come in and fix it for an additional cost is maybe even another step up in the value chain.
Right. There's definitely other things that I have thought of that I think would add value to it and would, you know, help kind of push people into the direction of saying, yes, this is valuable enough for me to pay for. But some of them are complicated to the point that there are entire products built around just that functionality. So it's not like I can say, oh, well, let me just throw this in there and I'll wait for that to be done before I launch, and, you know, so that I know that it's valuable enough, because some people may not care about some of those things. So I really need to just get it to a point where it's, I'll say, valuable enough, and then kind of take things from there.
Right. And to clarify, you're marketing towards small software and SaaS businesses. Is that right?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it's, you know, just small SaaS businesses. It's more the businesses who are advanced enough to actually be interested in looking to protect their servers because they have something to protect. One of the things that strikes me is that the people who are really interested in AuditShark have been hacked before. The people who have gone through that experience and have gone through the pain to say, oh, well, what happened on my server? Why did this thing get hacked? Those are the people who have this burning pain to say, oh, well, I need to actually do something about my servers because my entire business rests upon having these things up and running. And if I lose those servers, I lose my business.
Right. So it's people who are going to have a dedicated server because they need to be able to install, you know, an actual EXE. So it's not shared web hosting or something, but it's a dedicated, typically a web server, I would imagine. Sure, it doesn't have to be, but my guess is the people you're going to find using content marketing, SEO, kind of the online marketing techniques you're going to go after are more likely going to be small businesses on the web, at least to start with. And then it's like you said, it's people who are aware enough that they need to be secure, right? That they even have the notion that they need to lock some stuff down, and kind of the willingness to spend the time to do it.
Right. I mean, I've seen a couple of people show up on my launch list over the past couple of weeks who are healthcare related or financial related, whether they're, you know, banks or loan agencies and things like that, which is interesting to see. You know, they're the people who actually take it seriously. If you're just looking for, you know, a scan of your servers because you want to do it once, probably not a good fit. But if you're the type of company that's a little bit paranoid, but you don't necessarily have a security expert on staff, and that's really what it comes down to, is if you don't have a security expert on staff, or you don't have tools that you're already using to help lock down your machines, then AuditShark is probably a good fit because it can at least point you in the right direction.
Right, because it runs a scan every day, right? That's the thing. You install it once and then it gives you updated information. It's not, because you can download, I'm sure I could go online and find like a $99 scanner or a free scanner or something that will scan my server for security holes, but yours is, it's as a service.
Right.
And yep. What's the yep. pricing?
On the low end, for two servers, it's $79 a month, and then it basically goes up from there. If you get to 8 servers a month, it's $199 a month, and then for 20 servers, it's $399 a
Got
month.
It.
Those are kind of initial prices right now. There's other functionality that I want to add in, but I don't think that the, you know, bumping up the price point would be justified until I start adding those other things
right.
in.
You got to get those first customers in there first paying you for it.
To be fair, I mean, I'm not necessarily as interested in saying, oh, well, I have all these people paying me $199 a month. What I'm really interested in is making sure that they are getting the value out of it to say, hey, $199 a month is a no-brainer.
Right.
It's like, okay, well, what about $299? What about $399?
Right.
And then try to find, you know, the ideal price point. Not that there really is one.
You're not saying you're going to raise prices. I mean, I would imagine you'd grandfather people in, but it's kind of as you find it's a no-brainer for people to do it, then you want to, you know, potentially raise prices on future folks.
Right, right.
So we've kind of called out a few steps that need to fall into place for you to get to launch. We, you know, talked about the V2 UI you're trying to get out. That's a technical issue. There's getting the remediation in. That's a technical issue. Then there's the kind of risk issue of, with remediation, are people willing to pay for it? Does it provide enough value? And then you want to hone your marketing message, right? You want to get like a headline or a tagline or a way to describe AutoChark in just a couple of sentences, basically. Or I'm sorry, even just a couple of words, frankly, because that's all you have in like a website headline or an ad headline. You want to find a pretty good one that, that converts well for you. You feel like if you get those four things dialed in, that you're ready to basically get people paying for it and, you know, get asking early access customers for money and seeing what happens and then maybe releasing it to the world, assuming that, that they say yes?
Yeah, I think so. The remediation piece is big. I would like to kind of pursue figuring out how to work in, you know, services as kind of that hybrid model that I talked about, but I haven't put any mental time or effort into figuring out how that might look.
Anything else you want to add? Because I think we've, you know, kind of done a decent rundown of basically the last 3 years, as well as what we hope to see here in the next month or two.
I don't think there's too much. I mean, I understand the sentiment from people that it's been a very, very long time and I haven't launched AuditShark and I'm not exactly a shining example here of how to launch a micropreneur business. But at the same time, I do want to point out this is not a micropreneur endeavor. I've said that up front. I don't want to scapegoat everything onto, you know, the medical issues that I kind of alluded to earlier. But it's been about 3 weeks since I, you know, started the treatments and everything. So I think that things are going reasonably well. And I don't see any reason why they shouldn't continue to go well. I can keep people posted as to what the progress is. I mean, I don't think that it's going to be very much longer, though. So now that we've talked a lot about AuditShark, do you have any updates
on
Drip?
Yeah, I have 90 seconds of updates. I'll keep it short. Basically, you know, Drip hasn't really, nothing has changed with Drip since we last talked, because I'm in the middle of, one, waiting to see how many of our trial users convert, because until I see that, I don't want to send an email to the, you know, the other thousands on the launch list. And in the meantime, we're just building out stuff like cancellation logic and onboarding assistance and an FAQ and email support snippets. And it's just trying to get Drip to scale up just a little bit. Right? We've had a handful for the past couple of weeks, and I just couldn't imagine emailing, you know, 10 times what we emailed a couple of weeks ago. We couldn't handle it. So we're trying to get things like support and onboarding and cancellations automated enough that we can essentially move forward. And I don't have an exact date in mind of when we're going to email that. I've been kind of brainstorming of like, huh, do we maybe just email another 300 in a couple of weeks and see how that goes? It's a super slow way to take it, but I just don't feel like we're there yet. Development is, I'll say it's the bottleneck. There's just the most things that need to get done are in the development queue. Marketing is now moving forward. My growth hacker intern started this week and he's hitting the ground running. So marketing stuff's great. A lot of stuff in place for the launch. I'm stoked about it, but we just have to get, there's more features that have to get done that aren't even features like parts of the app, but it's things that just have to be done in order to bring in several hundred trials all at once. So that's really it. Next week will probably be boring too, because we're just going to be cranking away at this queue of things that people have asked about. There are also things, we are building a couple things that people have canceled for, and I'm concerned that 10%, 20% of the new trials will also need that feature. So I'm not building them just to build it. I have probably 100 features that we could build just to build, but there are a handful that basically they're kind of deal breakers for folks. And so we want to get those done before I also let the masses in.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, there's hundreds of features that I have that are in Fogbugs that I just have not decided to pursue at the moment. It's just a huge list, and it's just not worth it right now.
Yeah, they're in.
Nice to have.
They're nice to have. I have them in a milestone that just says future. It says like V2.0 future, and they're just all assigned to that.
If you have a question or comment, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsforrestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.